From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Later on tonight, supernatural things. Looking forward to that. Here's what's happening. Fights, disturbances, and false reports of gunfire caused chaotic scenes and shut down several malls across the United States during the typically busy post-Christmas shopping season. 8 to 10 people suffered minor injuries during a melee in the food court at the Mills at the Jersey Gardens in Elizabeth, New Jersey. Similar disturbances unfolded across the United States on Monday at malls that were packed with shoppers returning gifts, using gift cards they received over the holiday weekend and searching for clearance deals. Many involved calls of shots being fired and youths fighting. It was unclear if the incidents were connected. Well, another Hollywood star has passed on. Carrie Fisher, best known as the iconic Princess Leia in the Star Wars franchise, has died following a heart attack. She was 60 years old. Fisher, who also starred in a host of popular 1980s movies, was married or engaged to famous singers and actors, suffered from bipolar disorder and drug addiction, and eventually became a mental health advocate. She had a medical emergency while on a flight from London to Los Angeles a few days ago, during which she stopped breathing. She was later taken to an intensive care unit at a hospital, where she had the heart attack again today. Fisher was born on October 21st, 1956, with showbiz literally in her blood. The daughter of singer Eddie Fisher and actress Debbie Reynolds, Carrie appeared at the age of 15 in the Broadway show Irene, which Reynolds also starred in. She first appeared in the movie screen in the 1970s Shampoo, and then, of course, she hit it big as Princess Leia in Star Wars.
The ship's almost finished. Two or three more things and we're in great shape.
The sooner the better. Something's wrong here. No one has seen or knows anything about Pedro, and he's been gone too long to have gotten lost.
Relax. I'll talk to Lando, see what I can find out.
I don't trust Lando.
Well, I don't trust him either. He is my friend. Besides, we'll soon be gone.
And then you're as good as gone, aren't you?
She would go on to the role in subsequent films as well, most recently appearing in the 2015 Star Wars The Force Awakens. Carrie Fisher, dead at the age of 60. China's lone aircraft carrier is prowling the Pacific as the country seeks to assert its military might and build up its naval warfare capabilities. The carrier's J-15 fighter jets practice air confrontations and air refueling in the Yellow Sea late last week before the ship and its flotilla of escorting frigates and destroyers headed into the open Pacific beyond Taiwan and Okinawa. Just what is happening and what is China up to? Let's check in with Jerry Corsi from WND.com. Jerry, your thoughts on China right now?
Well, I think China is really trying at this point to make a demonstration with Taiwan, with this carrier operating in the South China Sea. And that's in response to President-elect Trump calling Taiwan. We have a continuing conflict, which has not ever been resolved, between the national Chinese on Taiwan and the communist Chinese in China as two separate Chinas, which has been a continuing issue since the 1950s. China's really not an aircraft carrier power yet. This is its only carrier. It's fairly limited, but it is a show of force that will make an impact on the countries around the South China Sea.
Well, there's been talk, Jerry, that they want to build another aircraft carrier and park it off the coast of the United States.
I think China has a long way to go before they're a major aircraft carrier power. This is a fairly limited design. It's a diesel carrier. It's not nearly as big or as fast as our major U.S. carriers. And China is yet pretty new in terms of the technology and skill of aircraft carrier landing and aircraft carrier combat. But China will emerge and will continue to develop this, and it's a major effort of China. The next 20 years, I think China will be in a very different position with aircraft carriers. But today, I think this is mostly a show of force, and it's mostly aimed at the at Taiwan and this whole South China Sea that China is determined to dominate.
Jerry, look forward to talking to you in 2017.
Likewise, George. Happy New Year to you and to all the listeners. Thank you.
Jerry Corsi, WND.com. A young boy saved his family from a fire inside their home by using a phrase that he learned from Alvin and the Chipmunks. A four-year-old little boy, Mason Eichhorn, with his two-year-old brother, Brody, he noticed that smoke was in the kitchen in their north of Miami Beach house. At first, I saw smoke. And then I saw a fire, and then I saw a big fire, he said. Mason noticed that his brother was playing with the knobs on the stove, and they had a pizza carton on the top of it. It caught fire. So, you know what? He just started screaming, "Fire in the hole! Fire in the hole!" which he picked up from Alvin and the Chipmunks. Now, his mother heard this and thought the kid was kidding until she realized he really sees fire. Yeah, the little kid may have saved everybody's life in that house. Consumer confidence climbed in December to the highest level since August of 2001, as Americans were more upbeat about the outlook than at any time in the last 13 years, according to a report. That's an amazing story. Andre Aglachon, author of Thieves in the Temple. Well, is this a real happiness, or is it going to go away, Andre?
Well, George, thanks for having me. I mean, first of all, I mean, you know, this report, you know, the Conference Board out of New York corroborated basically from studies that were done by the University of Michigan and the National Federation of Independent Businesses, looking at consumers' views of their own financial situation and their views of the short and long-term prospects for the general economy. It showed that, yeah, I mean, you know, there's a lot of exuberance in households and businesses. It surged, as you said, to a 13-year high. People believe that the pledges that were made during the campaign by the Trump administration to boost more jobs, you now have them up now 21% versus 16% from where they were in February of 2011. More people are expecting wages to rise. That's 21% up from 17%. More Americans are now talking about, listen, I'm going to go buy a car, major appliances, you know, and they are looking to the administration to cut, to really come through on its promises of cutting taxes across the board, easing regulations, and seeing the stock market continue to soar. And then on top of that, George, you got the Fed coming out, raising interest rates, saying that we could probably look at even higher interest rates in 2017. That's another indicator that the economy is growing and it's picking up steam. But you know, we have to, I think, that the country needs to approach all of this news with caution, because there's a big difference between the realities of unraveling a global trade regime to restore jobs mm-hmm. back to the United States and what can actually be done. If we were to get both sides of the aisle for once to come together, the left and the right, to come together and do the right thing for the American people and craft a series of new proposals to recalibrate world trade to try to create greater equilibrium for the United States, I think probably in about 10 years, we could see a significant return of a number of jobs to the United States. But to think that it's going to happen overnight without creating a shock to the global financial system, I think is naive.
You're right, Andre. It didn't happen fast, and it's not going to come back fast. Thank you so much. More than 200 red-winged blackbirds died mysteriously and fell from the sky in New Jersey just ahead of Thanksgiving. No one knows why more than 200 of these blackbirds fell from the sky. They just say, my gosh, we can't figure it out. I remember a couple of years ago, around the 4th of July, 2,000 blackbirds also fell from the sky. So something's going on up there. A Minnesota home builder who missed death by millimeters said that he had to ask his friend to take a picture of his head to understand what happened when a nail wound up inches deep into his skull. Nick Thompson, who was framing a closet during the December 19th accident, said he must have hit a nail already in the wood, which caused the nail gun then to kick back into his face. surgeons removed a nail from his eye, he didn't lose his eyesight or injure his brain. We've got the story and the picture up there in our news at coasttocoastam.com. And while you're at coasttocoastam.com, take a look at our Instagram picture and figure out who that person just might be. Now, figure this. You're talking to somebody. Doesn't happen a lot. And all of a sudden, they burst into flames. Spontaneous human combustion. Larry Arnold is next with me on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. After leaving Lafayette College at a career in engineering, Larry Arnold founded the Parascience International to pursue the exploration of Fortean anomalies and consciousness. He's regarded by some as the world's expert on spontaneous human combustion. Of course, he wrote the book called The Blaze, and he is back on Coast to Coast. This is a phenomenon, Larry, that is just unbelievable. Good to have you. Hope you had a great holiday. Look forward to the new year with you.
Hi, George. It's a delight to be back with you. Blessings to you, Lisa, Tom, the staff, and your listeners. It's definitely a delightful pleasure for us to wrap up this distressing year with a chat with you and your listeners about one of the great Fortean mysteries that mainstream scientists find so distressing and disturbing.
Now, we have a lot of new people, and they're probably saying, what the heck is spontaneous human combustion?
Well, let's start out with spontaneous combustion first. Most everybody knows something about that. It's accepted by mainstream science. It's a byproduct of spontaneous heating, and it occurs when material increases in temperature without drawing heat from its surroundings.
Like a Samsung battery in a smartphone or tablet.
Exactly, like a Samsung battery, like piles of wet hay, compost, linseed oil, sawdust, manure piles, pyrite, coal dust. In fact, we've made this argument that a war has actually begun through spontaneous combustion. When USS Maine blew up in Havana Harbor back in the late 1800s, we don't believe that was sabotage. We believe it was coal dust in the bunker of the ship that spontaneously ignited and caused the start of a war. All that's acceptable in terms of spontaneous combustion, but as you well know, when you interject the word human between spontaneous and combustion, you ignite a firestorm of derision, controversy, disdain, and debunking.
Well, when you talk about debunking, I mean, you have proof, and a lot of people have proof, that this is happening and has happened, right?
Well, we would certainly agree with that statement, and we can invoke the reasons that the naysayers, the debunkers of spontaneous human combustion invoke and turn it around so that they actually end up affirming that the phenomenon can happen. And we're going to cite one specific example of that. We're going to quote Dr. Mark Benecki. He's an internationally renowned lecturer in forensic medicine. He teaches in New York. He teaches in Germany. And he's one who does not accept the research that we've done over now 40 plus years. He says, in part, in contrast to the first impression conveyed by gross destruction of the whole body, internal organs are frequently, essentially, not changed when the body is exposed to fire. He says, such things as the intestines, stomach, liver, heart, uterus, bladder, etc., are often well preserved. And here's the key point that he makes. This is a direct quote by Mr. Medecki.
Okay.
In forensic practice, there are no known cases in which internal organs of a burned corpse were damaged more severely than the outer parts. This practical observation is further proof, he says, that combustion never starts from inside a human body, end quote. So, if we could find just one case where internal organs are burned more completely than the external parts of a human body, then by Dr. Benecki's own reasoning and rationale, spontaneous human combustion must exist.
Have you found that case?
We have found dozens of cases. As you well know, the case that got us really captivated by this subject occurred in our home state of Pennsylvania back in December of 1966. And the victim in question is named Dr. John Irving Bentley.
Mm-hmm.
In December of that year, he was 92 years of age, apparently in pretty good health. Used an aluminum walker to motivate around his two-room apartment in Cowdersport in the northern part of Pennsylvania. On Monday morning, December 5, a local meter reader for the gas company, Don Gosnell, who also served as a volunteer fireman in the community, walked into Dr. Bentley's home on Main Street in Counterport to read the gas meter in the basement. En route to the basement, Don Gosnell noticed that there was a sweet odor permeating the hallway. Didn't think much more of it, went down to the basement, read the gas meter, and in turning around to go back upstairs to leave the home of Dr. Bentley, he noticed that there was a pile of ash on the earthen floor in one corner of the basement. Being a volunteer fireman, he took a professional as well as a personal interest in this curious little mound of powder, kicked it with his work boots, scattered around. It was cold, no embers, nothing hot about this pile of ash that was about 5 inches in height, 14 inches in diameter. He looked above the pile of ash and noticed that in the basement ceiling was a hole about 2 by 3 feet in size, and there were cherry red embers on the edges of some oaken beams that were nearly burned through. As he told us, he thought to himself at the time, gee, there must have been a fire in Dr. Bentley's home overnight. Obviously, it didn't spread, and clearly nobody in the fire department got a call to come out and put it out. Mr. Gosnell went back upstairs, and proceeding to leave the building, he first thought he'd knock on Dr. Bentley's door, just to, you know, give a cheery Monday morning greeting to the elderly physician.
Yeah.
Dr. Bentley's door was unlocked, which was normal for that time in Counterport. People just didn't lock the doors up there in northern Pennsylvania at that time in 1966. Don pushed the door open, expecting to see Dr. Bentley sitting in the chair in the two-room apartment in the sitting room of Dr. Bentley, and saw the chair was empty. Peered a little deeper into the room, did not see Dr. Bentley anywhere in the sitting room, decided he'd step into the apartment and peer into Dr. Bentley's bathroom to make sure the elderly physician was peachy keen fine and good health. And at that point, Don got the shock of his life, one he never forgot, and as he told us later, he wished he'd never made that entry into Dr. Bentley's bathroom, because what he saw there first was Dr. Bentley's aluminum walker that he used to help move about that two-room apartment, lying askew above a hole that he now realized was the other side of what he had seen a few minutes earlier down in the basement. Tangential to that 2 by 3 foot hole underneath Dr. Bentley's aluminum walker was half of a leg that Mr. Gosnell first thought was a mannequin's leg. And when he bent down to look at it closer, he realized it wasn't a mannequin leg. It was a human leg. It was Dr. Bentley's left leg wearing a leather slipper. And now he realized that the pile of ash that he had kicked just moments earlier down on the basement floor was Dr. Bentley's body, such as what was left of it. He rushed out of the building, down the street, and into the office of the gas company that he worked for and yelled the understatement of 1966, quote unquote, Dr. Bentley's burned up. Dr. Bentley had indeed burned up, but in a way that made no sense to Don Gosnell, the volunteer fireman, made no sense to any of the officials that we had the privilege to interview who were connected with the case. That would include the other firefighters in the community, the coroner, the deputy coroner, the undertaker, law enforcement officials, such as we could find them at the time. This case was so baffling and so disturbing that Dr. Bentley's son was never told the details of his father's death until he saw us discussing the case publicly for the first time on television in 1980 on a program called That's Incredible.
I remember that show.
Remember that. A lot of people remember that show.
It's hard to forget.
Yeah. What Don Gosnell found viewed with his eyes in Dr. Bentley's apartment, he could not forget. He realized that he was the first one to discover what history has called, what we call, a classic case of spontaneous human combustion, in which the body is burned nearly to powder, leaving perhaps a few extremities, the lower legs, the outer limbs, shoulders or head perhaps, to indicate that that pile of powder once belonged to a living human being. And yet surrounding combustibles that should have exhibited tremendous amounts of heat and or flame damage escaped unsinged and unburned. In Dr. Bentley's case, the aluminum walker was, as we said, askew above the hole through which his body incinerated. Aluminum will melt at 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. The aluminum walker was intact. Even rubber tips on the legs of the walker did not melt. directly above the edge of the hole through which Dr. Bentley immolated was a bathtub that was painted with enamel paint. We were at that fire scene. We could chip pieces of the paint off the tub. The paint, though it was blackened from light carbonization, did not blister.
Hold on, Larry. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back and talk about that. And also, of course, why nothing else around the body seems to burn. I find that fascinating, too. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Larry Arnold, as we're talking about spontaneous human combustion. His book, Ablaze, and our macabre webmaster, Lex, has posted a picture of the burned-up Dr. Bentley on our Twitter feed, if you want to get up there. Larry, I'll let you finish up that story on the good doctor, and also ask you the question that you can answer, and that is, why aren't any of the surroundings ever burned, only the body?
Okay, let's wrap up Dr. Bentley, because at the time of his death in December 1966, there really was no earnest investigation, and interestingly, the coroner declared cause of death to be asphyxiation. Well, in order to do that, you need a trachea to find evidence of soot that was inhaled. There was no trachea. So even the death certificate is misrepresenting the details of Dr. Bentley's baffling burning. After acquired burial of both body and the facts in the case, the episode was largely forgotten until we discovered it 9 years later and started talking to the local people up there and documenting what now has probably become the classic photographic evidence for what we term classic spontaneous human combustion, which is the smoking, blistering, or burning of a person in the absence of a known, identifiable nearby burn agent. That is, if you can rule out external ignition, an external ignition source, caustic chemicals, high amperage electricity, radioactive material, or a radiant heat source, then by concept, you have to consider that spontaneous human combustion is at play. And in the case of Dr. Bentley, to refer back to the quotation that we attributed to Dr. Benecki earlier in the interview, Dr. Bentley left behind no internal organs. What was found in his bathroom by Don Gosnell was half of his left leg, his lower left leg, a kneecap that had fallen into the basement, and arguably his head that was found on the water pipes below the flooring. Everything else was powder. Every internal organ was ashen to dust. So again, by Dr. Benecki's definition of what SHC can't be, he's proven that spontaneous human combustion is a reality. We've looked for external ignition sources in Dr. Bentley's apartment. Did he use an accelerant? Was he a victim of foul play, an arson murder? Was he suicidal? We ruled out all that. There was no evidence whatsoever to support any of those considerations. He was a pipe smoker. It's been argued that he dropped a pipe on his lap and he, you know, ignited his robe and he hobbled with his aluminum walker to the bathroom to get water to put out the fire. Well, that makes no sense for numerous reasons, one of which, he was a physician. He was keen of mind. Everyone we spoke to who knew Dr. Bentley said he was mentally alert and acute. If he had ignited his robe, the first thing he would have done was either get out of the robe or drop to the floor and rolled.
Sure.
He would not have spent 5 minutes trying to hobble across his apartment with his walker to get to a source of water in the bathroom. Besides that, the pipe that he did smoke was found neatly in its holder in a stand on a table next to the chair where he spent most of his life. So that wouldn't make any sense to us. We believe Dr. Bentley ignited standing in situ in his bathroom for reasons that we truly don't understand and are still trying to explain. To your question, why there is no surrounding heat and flame damage, Dr. Bentley's fire scene is dramatic proof that those situations do exist, albeit quite rarely. We were at the fire scene. The ceiling in Dr. Bentley's home was about 7 feet, 7.5 feet. We could touch the ceiling. We're 6 feet tall. We could stand in his bathroom and touch the ceiling with our feet.
All right, low ceilings.
The ceiling above the point to which his body burned, not up, but downward, was not blistered. As we said earlier, the paint on the bathtub directly above the edge of the halter, which his body immolated, did not blister. Whatever the mechanism is that causes the flaming fate that befell Dr. Bentley and hundreds of people like him, is an energy that, if it produces a lot of thermal energy, it's very quick and short-lived.
It's a burst almost, isn't it?
It could be a burst, and there is reason for us to suspect in some cases that is exactly what happens. A very high heat but extremely short-lived thermal energy consumes, vaporizes, dehydrates, breaks down the water molecule in a person's body.
Could it be happening, Larry, from the cellular level?
It could very well be happening at the cellular level. In our book, Ablaze, we look at cellular biology mechanisms, including various enzymes and chemicals, an enzyme, hydrogen. The mind just went blank at 135 here.
So we're talking about cellular level.
Yeah. There's all kinds of mechanisms, chemical or bioelectrical, that we believe can explain many cases of spontaneous human combustion. The body could, we believe, self-electrocute its physical structure. Various chemicals, the naturalist Ivan Sanderson argued that niacin, vitamin B12, was a possible mechanism by which the body could kick its temperature.
Well, you do flush with that, but... That would be intriguing, but that would also mean that everybody else who has spontaneously combusted might also have to be on niacin.
Well, this is one of the dilemmas with the research and the database that we've amassed over four decades of looking into this amazing phenomenon. If there is one simple, single explanation to explain the hundreds of cases in our database, we've been unable to identify what that would be. One of the reasons is the nature of the fire itself, and we use the word fire here in quotation marks, air quotes, if you will, because this does not appear to be, in many cases, an oxidizing combustion. It appears to, again, be more chemical or bioelectrical or plasma or some other kind of energy that is not the kind of open, combustible flame that you get when you strike a match or you light a gas stove burner. We think we're looking at a phenomenon that presents nearly identical patterns of left-behind evidence at the scene, but can be produced by various mechanisms. Not one single mechanism, we believe, is attributable or applicable to all the cases that we've identified throughout history over the last several hundred years.
Listen to this situation, Larry, and this is from me. I might be a witness for you. A couple months ago, I woke up in the middle of the night. I was in L.A. at the time, so it was after our show. And if I had a temperature, I would swear I was at 105 degrees. And that's boiling hot. And I wasn't sick. There was nothing wrong. I just was feeling extremely hot and warm. And, sweaty on my forehead. And within 10 minutes, it went away. It was as if somebody had just shut off the thermostat and it was gone. And I was fine, back to normal. But for a split second, I was heating up more than I've ever done before. And I can't understand what happened. And the fact that it shut off so quickly is also strange. Now, what do you think that was?
Well, we're not going to be a physician because we don't have a medical degree, so we're not going to attempt to diagnose. However, we would say that we can speak from personal experience to having quite similar episodes as to the one that you've just described. Now, we've spoken to many people, and we've looked at medical literature that documents human body temperatures going well beyond 105 degrees that you think your body expressed. The Guinness Book of World Records says the highest survived human body temperature generated internally is 115.8 degrees.
God.
That is not true. In the medical literature, we have found temperatures attested to by physicians attending to patients whose body temperatures went to 120, 130, 148 degrees Fahrenheit temperature. We can speak personally about being in bed, being near people who said that they feel that our body is literally burning up beside them, that our pajamas are soaked.
But what I can't get is how quickly it turned off. You know, right. I assume if you're gonna have that, you might do. You have a fever. It's gonna last for a while. This was like, I was fine. I mean, when it shut off, I was normal again in all ways. But leading up to that, man, I thought it was going to combust. I thought it was going to be one of your stories. You know.
Well, fortunately, you're not. We'd much rather be chatting with you this
yes.
way than looking at
no a question about that.
Resembling Dr. Bentley, no but, doubt. But the hypothalamus, which is the body's thermostat, does some very strange things that Western medicine doesn't yet fully understand. And your hypothalamus at that time may have decided to kick itself into overdrive and cause your body's metabolism to suddenly, spontaneously generate a tremendous amount of heat. And then it said, oops, this isn't going so well, and it shut itself back down. And so you're still here to talk to us and all your other guests and listeners.
I wonder, for those people who do combust, if it starts that way, if they can feel an internal body temperature rise to the point where it's uncomfortable like that.
You raise a very provocative question. We certainly cannot address that in terms of the fatal cases like Dr. Bentley, Mary Reeser, and scores of others like them. But we have identified a subset of the phenomenon of spontaneous human combustion in which people experience partial burning of the flesh from within, and they live to tell about it. And in most of those cases where we've been privileged to interview these people, they do talk about a sensation of light heat rising through various parts of the body. Not always. They have no conscious attribution as to the origin of the heat, why it begins, when and where it will end. But they do remark that before the body begins to smoke or blister, they have this oftentimes low sensation of a heat moving up their spinal column or through their upper body.
Any new cases out there, Larry?
Well, for the last couple of years, it's been pretty quiet, not a hot subject, if you will. The most recent that we've had the privilege of having firsthand experience with in investigating and talking to the first responders happened in eastern Oklahoma in 2013. That was February 20th, if memory serves, of 2013. The victim there in question is Danny Van Zandt, classic case. The Sheriff Lockhart in outside of Modo in Sequoia County was mystified, as was Fire Chief Russell. They knew of our research. When we contacted them, they said, please come down. We're eager to have you help us. We went down with the expectation not only being able to document the case through speaking quickly with the first responders, but hoping to meet with the next of kin, because we so desperately wanted to learn not just the condition of the fire that consumed the individual, mm-hmm. but to learn about the victim's background, what his medical history is, what his diet background is, what his lifestyle was. Was there something in any of those aspects that could help us come to better understand and answer the questions that you've been posing to us to explain this amazing biological phenomenon? We did get acquiescence from the father of the victim. Initially, he was willing to meet with us. We are looking forward to that. On the drive to his home while we're in Oklahoma, he called us and said, I've changed my mind. I don't want to meet with you. We stopped by the house anyway, but he was not willing, sadly, to discuss further with us anything about the medical history of his son. The family really tried to cover up the case, obviously, when the aspect of possible spontaneous human combustion was attached to the death of their relative. That didn't make them happy, and we can understand that. On the other hand, if the case had simply been reported as a fire fatality with nothing strange associated with it, we never would have found out about it, and it would have been lost to history. The family insisted that the home where the victim burned, be destroyed in a controlled burn by the local fire department, which they acquiesced to. When we were back in Muldrow a couple months later, giving a lecture in Eureka Springs, we went back to Muldrow to see, you know, what the scene looked like, and it had been sodded over. You would never know that there had even been a structure there, let alone a very localized human incineration that had once occurred within it. The fire scene there was very much like that of Dr. Bentley's. The fire, again, quote-unquote fire, mm-hmm. was relegated almost wholly to the body of Danny Van Zandt. In this case, there was a bit more left of him than in the Dr. Bentley case. Two lower legs were found, had dropped through the flooring into the crawl space below the kitchen area of his small home. One foot was still in a sneaker, which was turned upright on the floor. Very strange scene. His upper shoulders and head were still intact, but everything other than the heart between the upper shoulders and basically the knees had been destroyed. In a fire that, again, did no damage to the ceiling, did only slight carbonization, discoloration to the white enameled refrigerator that the body was lying against. Coins in the pockets of the clothing of Mr. Van Zandt were still intact on the floor. And that was it.
Just like that.
Just like that. When Sheriff Lockhart suggested that spontaneous human combustion might be at play at this fire scene, he was, as you might well imagine, severely ridiculed by people making comments on online postings. You know, these are Oklahoma, you know, Okies who know nothing about fire science. Well, the problem with that dismissal is that before Sheriff Lockhart became sheriff of Sequoia County, he had spent a 20-year career as an arson investigator. He knew what he should be seeing at the fire scene of Mr. Van Zandt. He also knew what he wasn't seeing and shouldn't be seeing but was looking at. He had every right to be puzzled and mystified, as did the local fire chief. We'll never forget what Chief Russell said. He said, "This fire began and stopped at the body."
It's just it truly remarkable. Now, is there any kind of scientific investigation underway to investigate these cases?
The scientific investigation that we are aware of, other than what we have done personally, is done by the debunkers who are trying to disprove spontaneous human combustion. And their experiments for many decades have focused around the concept of the wick theory. That is very simply that the body contains adipose tissue, basically fat, and that once the body is ignited externally, the clothing of the victim becomes the wick of the candle, the body's fatty tissue becomes the fuel, and over several long hours, the body slowly smolders in a low-temperature fire that eventually consumes the body to powder.
Hold on for a second, Larry, at the top of the hour, but we're coming back for more.
Feeling lost? Not by your radio? Grab your smartphone or computer and listen to iHeartRadio. Pick up the free iHeartRadio apps in the App Store or go to iHeartRadio.com.